Those of you who are with us for the first time, maybe are listening in for a case that you are involved in some way, this is a public meeting, though we have no one arranged to speak today outside of board staff and committee members. So you are more than welcome to listen in and hear what we discuss and deliberate, but I would ask that you not raise your hand or attempt to speak during the committee meeting, as you won't be recognized. So it is the opportunity to listen, but not to participate. And I'd also like to thank Dr. Harris for chairing the committee meeting last time we met. I appreciate all the effort put in, and thank you for that. With that, let's do roll call.
Ryan, you're muted.
You're right. I'll do roll call. We just were jumping from one meeting to the next, so my apologies.
Yeah, no problem.
Caputo?
Here.
Harris?
Here.
Ali? Who's that? Okay. Ali? That's the new member. My apologies. Who is that? Asari? Bukami?
Here.
Amtiaz?
Here.
Kalamchi? Kappas?
Here.
Martin?
Sure.
Motihari?
Yeah.
And I think that's it.
And did we get a response to Asrari or Ali?
Not Mia, but it looks like she's on.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you not hear me?
No,
I'm here, by the way.
Okay. And Madi, what is Madi's note taker?
Oh, that.
Is that you?
That needs to be Seamus is supposed to make a thing about that.
Yeah, I think that, let me look at that. Because Seamus, well, we just sent an email out yesterday to
About AI stuff.
Yeah. So we probably need to disable that. I don't know how to.
This is Seamus. I'm not quite sure, but what I did find is that maybe it's an auto join or a join meetings feature in your setting. If you could turn that off.
Yeah, this I think automatically came from Dr. Ali.
No, that's fine. It came, it's been turned off. Thank you, Madi.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate that. We do have another one, but I think that's the board, right?
Yeah, that one is from Yasmin.
Okay, cool. All right. As we get started here, too, the other thing I'd mention to those of you who are listening in, particularly if it's your first time joining our meeting, we do our best to not identify people by name. So if you're here listening in for someone on behalf of someone or for yourself, the best thing to know is the case number that's been assigned to your particular issue, because that for sure will be addressed. And that's the best way we can help you if you need any kind of assistance during the course of the meeting. So if you don't know what the case number is, you might want to take a minute and look through your emails or other information that you have to identify that case number, because, again, that's how we'll address cases, doing our best not to mention names directly. With that, are there any conflicts of interest to identify for this agenda that we're reviewing today? Dr. Fukami.
I have a conflict of interest with case 4B16. That would be
16.
That's right. That's 20240058.
Okay. Is that it?
Yes.
Oh, just that one? Okay. Anybody else? Dr. Ali?
Yes, I have a conflict of interest with, let me give you the case number, 202-400-466.
202-400, that's agenda item 4B17.
Yes.
Okay. And just to review, so you're well aware of this, not that you don't already know, but conflicts are only in the event that you feel as though you can't neutrally discuss and make a recommendation on the case. It doesn't necessarily have to be a conflict if you know or otherwise are familiar with the person or persons involved in the case.
Okay, then I will retract my conflict of interest because I am, you know, I have something to say about that case if you guys.
Well, no, I just, as long as you feel based on what I said, you don't have a conflict, then that's really the more important issue.
Okay, I understand.
Dr. Caputo?
Yes.
I apologize. I just wanted to point out, Dr. Ali, if you have a conflict and that you work with this individual or possibly have a business interest with this individual, that would also be a reason. That would be a reason to recuse. If you do not have that type of conflict and you just maybe know this person, but you don't know anything about this case independently of what you've received from the board, then you can decide whether to recuse or not.
Okay. Then I'm not going to recuse myself. I know the person, but I have no prior knowledge of this case.
Or connection with them.
Well, I know the person, but...
No, but I'm saying they don't work in your office or...
No.
Correct.
No,
okay. Not to that. Perfect. Well, I'm glad we addressed it, so then we can remove that. Were there any other cases or just that one? Dr. Ali.
No. That's it.
All right. So no conflict there. Any other members with conflicts to declare? So we look like we just have the one that Dr. Fukami identified. And again, in the event that that particular case comes up for dismissal, then Cynthia, you just won't vote, but it won't impact the outcome of the vote if we were to take it. So, okay. All right. Moving along, we are now on agenda item 3, and approval of the minutes from the meeting that Dr. Harris chaired on February 25th, 2025. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Okay. Is there a second to the motion?
Kappa second.
Thank you. Any further comments? Roll call.
Caputo?
Abstain.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali's probably abstain, but I'll call you out anyway. Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
And Motihari?
Yes.
Thank you. So motion carries for the approval of the minutes from February 25th, 2025. We are now
and on just to clarify the record, Dr. Ali did vote yes, but that was yes to the absent, correct?
To the abstain.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, don't ever do that again, Ryan. It's confusing. All right. We are now on agenda item 4, which is our case reviews.
Can I interrupt real quick,
Dr. Sure.
I know it's kind of awkward, and I know that Dr. Ali hasn't participated, but since he's brand new, and since I jumped on right at the very beginning, I don't know if there was an introduction, but I don't know if you want to take an opportunity real quick to just let him introduce himself, welcome him to the committee, and then...
No, absolutely, and I guess my own ignorance, I wasn't sure if he was a participant in our last meeting or not, so I should have checked too. But in light of that, Dr. Ali, this is your first meeting with us.
Yes, that's correct.
Well, first of all, welcome, and I apologize for not recognizing that earlier. Why don't you come on camera, and as Ryan had indicated, give us an introduction about yourself. And maybe a little bit about where you practice and what type of practice you have and how long you've been practicing.
Sure. You guys see me on the camera or no?
No.
Oh,
Yes, we did earlier.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we can. I can see you.
Oh, I don't. Oh, there you are.
Okay, so my name is Mehdi Ali. I practice in Sun City West. I've been practicing dentistry since, like, for 22 years now. I'm a prosthodontist, so I serve, you know, the retiree area in Sun City West. Most of my patients are geriatrics. I have several degrees, Master of Public Health. I have a business Master of MBA in Health that I got at ASU. What else? In my practice also there is a general dentist that does, you know, several procedures, and I do the more complicated procedures from implants and difficult surgical procedures. That's it about me, really. Any questions?
No, I just make the comment, you know, getting into that decade of life, I'm a little cautious about using the word geriatric, but yeah. I understand. But welcome. We sure are glad to have you here.
Yes, thank you.
Awesome. And, you know, as we course through this, I mean, most of us on the committee have been here since its inception, if not just right around there. And so it may seem a little overwhelming, but we'll get you up to speed. Certainly feel free to ask questions, and don't ever feel like anything's not appropriate otherwise, because that's what we're here for. And if we get out of hand, we've got board staff as well as our AG liaison, Seamus, to keep us on track, okay?
Sure. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ryan, for pointing that out. I appreciate it. And I apologize for not recognizing that earlier. Okay. Now, on to agenda item 4. We are looking at subsection A. And the first case to review is agenda item 4A1, case number 2023-00383. And generally what I'll do, Dr. Ali and board
Anthony,
group.
I think we got board staff in.
One more time, I apologize.
Hey, Dr. Papu?
Yeah.
I just want to ask Dr. Ali to please put yourself on mute if you're not speaking so that we don't pick up the background noise. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. So what we usually do, Dr. Ali, and for the committee, is I'll introduce the agenda item and case number, and then just open it up for discussion at that point. And at that time, we're open to, if you feel any one way or the other about a case, and Dr. Harris may be reminding me about the dismissals. Yes, Skip? Yeah. So I'll do that as well. Look, I should not miss a meeting. I just told Ryan that. I'm, like, out of step here. So the first thing I'll do is identify cases that I reviewed and am recommending for dismissal. If there is any case that's been listed as I go over that listing that you would like to discuss further, you don't have to explain or identify why at this point in time. It just has to be a case you want to discuss and not dismiss. After I read over the list, you would just indicate to remove that from the listing. And then once we do that, I'll kind of go back into what I was starting to mention on each individual case. So thank you, Dr. Harris. And here we go. So these are the cases that are being recommended for dismissal. Agenda item 4B1, case number 2024-00271. Agenda item 4B7, case number 2024-00412. Agenda item 4B10, case number 2024-00415. Agenda item 4B17, case number 2024-00466. Agenda item 4B18, case number 2024-00477. Agenda item 4B 20, case number 2024-00506, agenda item 4B21, case number 2025-00002, and agenda item 4B24, case number 2025-00019. Are there any cases that a member would like to remove for further discussion from that listing? And does any of those cases need to be repeated?
Anthony, did you remove B4B19?
Let me tell you.
400488.
I did not.
I thought I heard that, sorry.
And I could have, but it should have been 4B20 and 4B21.
Okay.
And then above that, 4B17 and 4B18.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, though. And I apologize if I did do that.
Okay.
Okay. If there are no cases to remove from that listing, I'll accept a second to recommend to the board dismissal of those cases.
Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Dari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Bahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the recommendation of dismissal on those aforementioned cases. Thank you, Skip. So back to the agenda, and something that we did change from a previous discussion, we won't do letters of concern. That seemed to be a little confusing, so we'll take those on a case by case. So we are back to agenda item 4A1, case number 2023-00383. As we course through the agenda on each of these cases, an opportunity for any member to comment, provide a indicated violation or otherwise is open. I usually wait for a period of a few seconds, and if I'm not hearing anything, I'll just kind of jump in to keep the discussion moving along. So it's really just to help us keep on track and not take up any more time than we need to as we're discussing these cases and making recommendations. So with that, any thoughts or comments regarding agenda item 4A1? So for me, I'm looking at pages 36, 37, and 105 to 107. I identified violations of 32.12.63D, 9, 10, and 15. So let's have a discussion and see where others are at.
Yeah, this is Harris. I saw insurance fraud, failed subpoena, and definitely a pattern of conduct. So, it's a group, so I'm not sure what our abilities are as far as disciplinary and non-disciplinary.
Usually it's just fines. If we approve and agree on those violations, then it's a fine of up to $2,000 for each violation. You said there was a failure to comply with subpoena on this one as well. I might have missed that. Did anybody else find failure to comply with subpoena?
Page 107.
So it's there.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to add that. So that would be 32.12.63D12. Thank you, Dr. Harris and Dr. Asrari. All right. So the other thought that I had here, and I was in agreement with really the – is Julie with us? Dr. Coulter, are
yes,
you here?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I am.
Well, please let Dr. Folk know that we sure do appreciate all the effort he put into this. He did what I was hoping he would do, and I sure hope the rest of the committee feels the same way. But yep. There was enough going on here, and Seamus, we may need a little guidance from you as well, but I feel as though we need to refer this to the Attorney General for violation of the ACFA. So that's I was certainly seeing a lot of issues with how billing was going on. And for those of you who don't know, the ACFA is the Arizona Consumer Fraud Act, which we have done before. So we can handle the fine separately and then deliberate about that recommendation for referral and go from there. Dr. Fukami?
I think I had the same question as everyone, which is, are we dealing with individuals versus business? So when you find a violation, are you finding, are you using 1263 or are you using 32-1201?
So in this particular case, because it's the entity, we're using 1263. We could go back and look at individuals as well. And if we were to identify any violations against individuals, then we'd revert to 120101.
Okay.
And we can do that. I think the larger issue here is I think how things are being handled at the entity and maybe how dentists are being directed. And for me, at least, that was the larger issue, but I certainly am in agreement with you, and we can do things individually if the committee is so inclined.
Dr. Caputo, this is AAG Monahan. Could I interject for a second?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. So, you know, I just didn't want to be disingenuous, you know, during your discussion. If there is a reason that you believe that there could be probationary terms, we've never really talked about this. The committee's never really gone this way. So as part of your recommendation, is it something that you're interested in? Again, we can look into it, but you could also recommend it. You know, the statutes regarding business entities does allow the committee to recommend probation with certain terms that may address, you know, I know that you're looking at individuals. I'm not saying that that's not appropriate either, but there may be probationary terms that you could address with the business entity as a whole to address some of these issues that you've seen.
And when you say that, Seamus, what do you mean by probationary terms? Would it be a modification of practice? Would it be a period of no practicing until some of these issues are addressed? Or would it just be a period of time where they're maybe watched and observed and audited and then come back to it after that probationary period ends to see how things were accomplished or resolved?
It could. And because we're going down this route, if you would give me just some time and maybe move on to the next case and come back to this one after, so I could give you a little bit better advice on, you know, maybe what those options are.
I'm fine with taking you up on that because I think there is a lot going on with this particular, situation. And,
it'll just take me a few minutes. It's not a big deal. I just need to look at the specific options.
What I would tell you to focus on, Seamus, is the audit report. That is, I think, the second or third, identifier in the packet that we received under that particular case.
Yeah.
Because that's where Dr. Folk really goes into detail of what we had asked to be done at our previous meeting when we deliberated recommendations for this case.
Okay, perfect. If you will just give me a few minutes and then come back to this one.
Okay.
That would
so be we'll perfect. Put a we'll put a hold on the discussion on agenda item 4A1. And we'll move on to agenda item 4A2, case number 2024-00119. Comments, thoughts, or otherwise by the committee?
This is Harris. I'd like to make a motion to find disciplinary conduct.
Okay. We'll start with the violations first. What are you seeing for violations, Skip?
Poor records, failed subpoena, poor crown and bridge, the removable was questionable, and there may be some insurance fraud issues there as well.
Okay. So I'm seeing violations on my end of 32, 12, 01, 01, 14, 17, 23, and 24. And something that may be helpful for you to do, Dr. Ali, if you want to open up on a separate location on your computer, the definition of unprofessional conduct for licensees, it's ARS 32-120-101, which we refer to for typically, as Dr. Fukami was mentioning earlier, for licensees. And then there's also 32-1263, which is grounds for disciplinary action against entities typically. It might be helpful to have those up just to refer to. There's a question, Dr. Fukami.
I think for, did you say you had 14, for the violation numbers, did you have 14, 15, 23, 24?
In this, I had 14, 17, 23, and 24. And so 14 is...
I may mix it up with a business one. Hold on.
That's okay. 14 is our usual.
Yeah. So it'd be 15. I think you mean 15 instead of 17, or correct me if I'm wrong.
Employing unlicensed, let me say, you could be right. 14, 17, 23, 24. 23 and 24 for sure. 14, 17, yes, you are correct. It should have been 15. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you.
So I did have 17 as well.
Okay, let me see what I wrote.
So that was having to do with staff that's uncertified taking x-rays and other procedures out of scope without the appropriate.
Okay, so maybe it was on my end, Dr. Fukami. I didn't see 15. Can you identify an area where you see 15?
Oh, hold on. I'm looking at – I'm sorry. I said 16. That's what it was.
Okay. So it's billing issues?
I'm actually looking at case three. So am I wrong? So on 14, on number two, I have, and I may have this incorrect, 14, 16, 17, 23, 24.
All right, what's 16? 16 is, okay, I mean, I can see that. Deb, did you see 16 as well?
I did not. That doesn't mean I could have overlooked it, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think it represents the thing that's important there, Cynthia, is were there more than one instances of irregularities in billing? Did you identify that?
And I think this is Kappus again. I'm jumping in because my notes do say I was unsure about that as being a pattern, that it was intentional. So I did have a question on it. I looked at it and did not see it.
Well, I think the language of intention is not really there.
Defer to someone who does restorative. It's on page. Why can I not pull up this page?
Was it something that the investigator commented on?
Yeah, 2887.
Perfect. Let's just go take a look.
And again, I'm plus minus on this one.
2887. Double billing. Yeah, and I think maybe that's where I stumbled a little bit. It was that idea of repeated. I mean, to double bill in and of itself would be like a more singular instance.
Okay. But
does anybody else feel strongly or the other about that violation? So I think we're okay to maybe leave that one off. Unless you want to keep it there or you want to have it there, Cynthia, your call.
Nope.
All right. So we are considering violations of 32-1201-01, 14, 17, 23, and 24. 24 is record keeping, 23 is noncompliance with subpoena, and then 17 and 14 we already discussed. Is there a second to the finding of those violations?
Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Connie?
Yes.
Antunes?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Hi.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for those violations. Carrying on, I'm looking at page 2885 in the packet, and going off of Dr. Harris's previous comment or recommendation, I would agree that this is a disciplinary recommendation. I was proposing 40 CEUs through the Credits Cares program in diagnosis, treatment planning, record keeping, crown and bridge treatment planning and restoration, removable partial dentures treatment planning and restoration, and root canal therapy. Comments about that recommendation?
And the $500 failure to subpoena.
We'll come to that.
Okay.
Yes, but I'm with you on that. This is just for the CEUs.
Is there an ethics or jurisprudence component?
Usually that's covered in record keeping, Cynthia, but we could include that to ensure it because I don't disagree with it.
Yep. Yes.
So we'll add ethics to that.
Okay. Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Tommy?
Yes.
Intiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation. As far as financial recommendations are concerned, I'm recommending restitution to insurance in the amount of $5,067.08, as well as the fine of $500 for noncompliance with subpoena. Comments or a second?
Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Intiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for those recommendations regarding restitution and fine for noncompliance with subpoena. Thank you all. We are now on agenda item 4A3, case number 2020. Yes, you're back.
I apologize, yeah, for interrupting you. If you're ready to go back, I'm prepared.
Okay. So let's go back to agenda item 4A1, case number 2023-00383. We can start with at least the fines. Violations probably better?
I just want to confirm, Dr. Caputo, before. So this is a registered business entity. Is that correct?
Staff?
That's correct.
It is, Seamus.
Okay, perfect. So, again, I just want to preface everything you do with you can choose to treat this business entity the exact same way that you would treat any other licensee. After you have found unethical conduct, which you already have under section 1263D, so back under 1213, which is the business entities registration and kind of layout, it says, The board may do any of the following pursuant to its disciplinary procedures if a business entity violates the board statutes or rules. And under five is issue an order prescribing a period and terms of probation that are best adapted to protect the public welfare and that may include a requirement for restitution for violation of rules under this chapter. And so, I would just preface it with you do have the ability to recommend probation, and a term of that probation could be, at the least, based on your conversation, it could be a monitoring of their billing practices for a period going forward. Thank you.
Okay. I think that's helpful because I certainly did feel that way, and I imagine others did as well. This was pretty troubling, and like I said, I think Dr. Folk did a really great job in completing the audit as we had directed from our last meeting about this issue. So let's just go back to the violation so we can at least address that. I had proposed violations of 32.12.63D, 9, 10, 12, and 15. Is there agreement on that? Other violations identified or other comments? And if none or other violations, then a second to that recommendation. I know we added one per Dr. Fukami, I believe, which was number 10.
Sounds good. Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Tommy?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Lahari?
Yes.
Okay, so motion carries for the finding of those violations. And in light of those violations, as mentioned earlier, we can levy a fine up to $2,000. So I'm recommending a fine of $8,000 for those four violations in total. In addition, I would accept Seamus's recommendation to institute a probationary period, I would say for at least 3 months minimally, unless others feel differently, to monitor their billing and claims filing practices. And then would it be appropriate, Seamus, at the end of that time, whoever is monitoring that, provide a report back, or do they go right to the board?
Thank you, Dr. Caputo. For the record, that was not a recommendation.
I was just giving you your option.
I know, yeah. I'm just kidding. But yes, absolutely. So the board's standard terms with any kind of monitoring would always require some kind of either periodic report and or periodic report and a final report before the individual would be released.
Okay, and does that go back to the board, or would it come to the IC?
To the board.
Okay, so the board would then take over from there, and then I imagine the board has its own entity that it works with for that process? Or does one get identified?
It does have a couple, so you do not have to identify it.
Okay.
You know, we have been getting, you know, also other options provided by other attorneys. So if you'd like to keep it vague, but just, you know, the terms or at least the premise of what you want clear, then that can help.
Okay. So I'm fine with that. I mean, I don't mind a probationary period for auditing of billing and insurance claims processing practices for a period of 3 months. How does the committee feel about that?
This is Harris. I was going to suggest a year.
Okay.
And did we include in there the fine for failure to respond to a subpoena?
I'll double check, Skip, and if not, we'll add it. I'm just going to make sure. Failure to respond to subpoena is...
Yeah, that's 12.
Oh, it is 12? So we did.
I'm sorry, not for the finding, but for the fine.
Yeah, if there's four.
Okay.
Yes, then we did. But thank you for verifying. Yes, we did. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes. So $8,000 fine, a recommendation for auditing of billing. We should just say all financial practices within the office. Is there a better way to say that? Let me ask that.
Was that a question
for the group? Is there a better way to say?
Okay.
I'm open for input.
I think all financial transactions is a reasonable one. I would second that.
Okay, and we're going to recommend a year and let the board make that final determination. Fair, Skip?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we are recommending an $8,000 fine for the identified violations. In addition, an audit for a period of not less than 12 months on all financial transactions within the practice, which was seconded by Harris. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Infuse?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Marari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that recommendation and fine recommendation. Thank you all. It was a heck of a way to start off the agenda, I can tell you. I'm sure you others felt the same way, and we'll just get into the next one, too, because it wasn't any easier. We are now on agenda item 4A3, case number 2024-00473. Comments, thoughts, or otherwise by the committee? I was looking at violations of 32, 12, 0101, 14, 23, and 24.
Yes, sir. Harris seconds.
Other comments? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Is yes?
Yes.
Others?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
What are we?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of those aforementioned violations. For the committee, I was looking at page 3113. I was going to propose a disciplinary recommendation to include 20 CEUs through the Credits Cares program and diagnosis, treatment planning, record keeping, ethics, insurance building, restorative dentistry. Thoughts, comments, changes, otherwise, or second?
I just want to make sure there was some ethics in there because of the records. Yeah.
And there is.
So then Harris seconds.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Mukami?
Yes.
Infuse?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation and CEUs as listed. Onto the financial part of this, I am proposing restitution back to Access in the amount of $2,687.87, as well as a fine of $500 for noncompliance with subpoena.
This is Kappas, just a minor modification there. It really doesn't go back to Access. It goes back to UHC Community Plan, which
right,
is
right, and I appreciate care. That. Yeah. Yeah.
For the appropriate managed care program.
Correct. To the Access insurer, how about that?
Works for me.
Yeah, that's fine, and I appreciate that. You're correct. So restitution to the excess insurer, in this case, UHC Community Plan, in the amount of $2,687.87, and then the $500 fine for noncompliance with subpoena. Comments or a second?
Second.
Second, Fukami. Wow, out of left field. That's awesome. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Ipias?
Yes.
Chavez?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for those financial recommendations and fine. We are now on agenda item 4B2, case number 2024-00325. And Seamus and Ryan, I just need a little direction on this. This licensee is also named in agenda item 4B19, case number 2024-00488. My understanding was that there was a licensure recommendation for previous actions. In light of that situation, do we still just handle this as if we know nothing or are not aware of anything else going on with this particular licensee?
Dr. Caputo, this is Seamus. Thank you for the question. Yes, so, and thank you for your confidence there. I would just encourage you to treat all cases the same, including these two. Okay. If for any reason you see that the violation or issues are prevalent in both of the cases you're reviewing today, it would be appropriate to recommend that you combine those for any kind of disposition. But again, I would just ask that you take those cases on their own merit and make a recommendation based on what you have in front of you.
I appreciate that. Okay. Okay. So going back to agenda item 4B2, comments, thoughts regarding finding of violations from the committee? I was looking at violations of 32, 12, 01, 01, 14, 23, and 24.
Second, Fukami.
Second, Fukami, thank you. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Ipias?
Yes.
Chavez?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of those violations. For the committee, I'm looking at page 3459. I would propose a disciplinary action recommendation to include 4 CEUs in record keeping. I am proposing revocation of the 1302 permit as well, in terms of our recommendation. And just to address the ethics part that may come up, typically the record keeping that is performed includes ethics, but we could add that separately if so inclined, and I'm open to that. But that's where I'm at, open for discussion.
This is Harris. I had the revocation of the 1302, but I put a limit on it until the CE was completed. Did you have a more open-ended thought?
I mean, I felt, and I'm certainly open to others' interpretation, but I felt that the way this person is administering sedation is dangerous. I don't think they should be sedating patients. So I was thinking in perpetuity, but maybe that's not something that's typically done, but that's where my head was at.
I had it for suspension of the 1302. I don't know if it's a revocation or suspension, what would be the right term, but until the CE is also completed, and it would be a hefty CE, almost reflecting starting over the process of getting a moderate station permit.
So then we would have to add probably to that CE. So would you think, would you recommend, I'm fine with that, with both what you and Dr. Harris are saying, Dr. Fukami, so let's start there. Then let's say suspension or inability to practice any type of parenteral sedation or any type of sedation until the licensee goes through a complete retraining in parenteral moderate.
Correct, because in my logic being that the way this case was treated, that the treatment was performed here, reflects a lack across multiple facets, right? And that thing is, you can't really just target just one. I think it really represents restarting from the beginning.
No, I'm with you. Is that what you're getting at too, Skip?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I was just trying to put a defined amount on so it didn't look so punitive.
Okay. So for the for staff, and I imagine there are people on the board that know this already, but typically, the complete training for dentists permitted at the 1302 level involves 60 hours of didactic training and 20 patient cases. So that would be included along with the 4 CEUs in record keeping and ethics. Sound good?
Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion?
I have a question. For the CE, is there any CEs for treatment planning also?
I didn't propose that, but if you'd like to, Dr. Ali, please do.
Because, in both cases, he failed. Let me see my notes. Both cases, he failed to do a good diagnosing for number 30 and 31. And also, I don't know if we're talking also about case that ends in 88.
We'll take separately, as Seamus had mentioned to us. So, yeah.
So basically, is not taking good x-rays, he's not diagnosing correctly. That's why he ended up per se pulling the wrong tooth or not pulling both teeth, let's say, if they were both causing the issue. So I think some CE courses of treatment planning is indicated for this case. So.
All right, so let's do this. We'll do a disciplinary recommendation to include 4 CEUs in record keeping and ethics, or including ethics, 4 CEUs in diagnosis and treatment planning, suspension of the 1302 permit until complete retraining in IV parenteral or just parenteral moderate sedation is completed to include 60 hours of didactics and 20 individual patient cases. Good with that?
Yes.
Is there a second?
Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Interest?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation, and then we have a $500 fine recommendation for noncompliance with subpoena. Is there a second to that recommendation?
Yes, Harris seconds.
Okay, further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Bobby?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Fukami? Fukami?
Sorry, I couldn't turn off the mute. Yes.
Antias?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the fine recommendation on noncompliance with subpoena. We're now on agenda item 4B3, case number 2024-00360. I just kind of wanted to chat about this a little bit. I believe the investigator recommended dismissal on this case. I didn't necessarily agree. And it seems as though the way this dentist is practicing sedation is questionable. One of the things I'm curious about is why they're continuing to use a papoose board when that's really not what's being done in these types of cases. Also why there are no parents allowed in the operatory, which is also not common with this level of sedation administration. It just bothered me that the patient came out and made those complaints to the parent, and the dentist just told the parent to disregard everything that the patient was saying. I struggled with that. So I'm wondering where other folks are at, and I'm just kind of curious of what people's thoughts on. Umar, go ahead.
Yes, Anthony. At this level of sedation, I always have a parent back, and we don't use papoose.
That's what I'm seeing as well, and I talked to a number of people. It just doesn't seem like the papoose. My understanding is, and help me if you agree or disagree or know differently, but my understanding is if a papoose board needs to be used, probably not the appropriate level of sedation for the patient.
I'll only use papoose if it's like an emergency hold-and-go extraction.
Right. But if you had a patient that you were scheduling for enteral moderate sedation and they needed to be papoose in order to hold them in place, would you think that patient would be better treated as a deep sedation GA case?
Most likely, yes.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Cynthia, do you have any thoughts about this?
Well, I guess I'm going to phrase this two different ways to discuss what you're talking about. I don't have a big problem with the papoose being used as a backboard, which is why I think some folks still lay it on the chair to firm up the, right? So I think that's there, and the straps are not necessarily placed, but are available if restraint of, for example, a special needs child, or if they're in the last 5 minutes of their 30-minute appointment, they need to get something finished without compromising the child's safety. I think that's probably the thought on the papoose board. Do I think it's used very regularly and should be planned for from the outset to add to the sedation? I agree that the trend is away from that, but I wouldn't necessarily, admonish this one for having just the papoose available in that circumstance.
Were actually using it to restrain because they said.
I get it.
Okay.
Yes. That's true. But I'm just saying that's why I didn't necessarily latch on to initially the second part about parent being present or not. I agree with you. Again, I think that's a plus minus for a lot of folks. I think it probably would have mitigated the situation if they were present, right? I do agree with that. So that's to me more of a letter concern versus a violation. The part I wanted to flip to, what gave me pause here, because I actually didn't see major standard of care issues, but were two things. And one was that if you look at page 3561, where I think it was the licensee and or the attorney gave a pretty full description of what they view as transpired here, that as part of their description of what happened outside of the treatment room is a description of how they had CCTV or video recordings of what's happening in the waiting room. So for me, this is where I found kind of strange is you may see in the middle of the middle of the page, there's a paragraph that describes that this child, quote unquote, the video clearly depicts a clearly sedated patient unable to hold his head up being placed into the wheelchair pretreatment. And I just, that makes me so uncomfortable I mean, I don't know how to explain it any further. It, to me, sedation as administered in the fashion that it was here, there's been a lot of discussion about what happened in the treatment room, but I think the sedation began before then, and I think that every person who has a sedation permit should be aware that that is also a part of the sedation treatment here. It's not clear to me how the patient was given medication or who was monitoring them while he was becoming sedated in the waiting room. And I think that's a point that should be brought up for them to know for at least future circumstances. And then the other thing is that I think he said that vital signs were stable throughout, but if you look at the actual numbers, I think that the pulse ox was missing in at least half of the readings. And if, there could be lots of reasons for that, and maybe that it fell off and or the patient was agitated. I don't know, but that should at least have been a side note on that part. So I wasn't inclined necessarily to find a violation. I thought this warranted at least a letter of concern because I don't know if these two issues were the ones that brought up the initial complaint, but I think it's still worth bringing up so that the practitioner can do better on this.
Yeah, and I sure do appreciate you saying that because I guess that was my feeling is that I felt like the licensee exuded a very high level of confidence that they're very well trained in this area and do it really well, and obviously they don't. I mean, it's just clear from just a couple of things you pointed out, right? As well as how the patient was managed. And I think those do have some pause. I didn't have this down for anything, quite honestly. I didn't think it was a dismissal, though, per se. I just wanted to see where other folks are. I'm fine with the letter of concern. Is there anybody else on the committee that felt one way or the other? Umar, what was your thought?
I had it for dismissal just because sedation goes sideways. But after hearing Cynthia, like, I'm fine with letter of concern.
Okay. Any other thoughts regarding a letter? I think it minimally a letter of concern to, I think, let this dentist know, hey, listen, I think you could probably do a better sedation, particularly on a patient with intellectual or developmental disabilities, and be more thoughtful about their management. I just felt like disregarding them, particularly in front of the parent, I thought that's a tough pill to swallow as a parent with a incapacitated child to be told don't listen to anything that they're saying. I struggled with that.
This is Harris, just one comment. I mean, that's what she says he said, not necessarily what he said. I routinely am impressed by what people self-recall that isn't what actually.
Agree.
This was obviously an emotionally charged moment for the parent, and we routinely see emotionally charged parents that remember. Again, I think the letter of concern is totally reasonable, and there's about 10 different things that would cause me not to do it the way they did it. But I think there's a little bit of he said, she said, and if in fact they were shown a video and they were properly consented and this is the technique that they opted for and they were aware of not being allowed in the back before the surgery or the procedure, I think that sheds a slightly different light on it. Obviously the parent was upset and they failed to not make an upset parent, but I'm not sure they did anything outside the standard of care.
Okay. I think that's reasonable too. And also,
Anthony, just using Versed by itself is probably not a good OCS combo.
Yeah, they did mix it, I think, with Visceral. It's not, you're not going to get a big improvement there, but yeah, I when I saw that, I agree. And it's not the best sedative drug, for sure. Okay. Cynthia, what would you tell April so we can make sure that the board has an idea of what we would like to see in a letter of concern?
So, again, I agree with all the comments, and to that end, I don't think it was below the standard of care, and I think a letter of concern was what I was aiming for.
Right.
And, again, I agree. I actually was debating on dismissal too, but I don't know that anything was done wrong, right? That's not our point here. I think we would do it differently is all. But I think, again, that comment in the letter was what bothered me the most, was just you have an obviously, I think the point of the CCTV was to prove that the he said, she said issue could be witnessed on the video. And I know that's why they put it there, to show that the dentist felt that the sedation wasn't indeed conducted in the fashion that was reported by the other side. I get that. So I appreciate that. My concern is I didn't understand if the CCTV was being used to monitor this patient in the waiting room, or why there's this, why that's there, or what's their mechanism. I mean, do they appreciate that when they give the sedative drugs in the waiting room, who's monitoring them? It's not clear to me. So I guess I would say the letter concern that we want to make sure they recognize that sedation begins at the time of the administration, and that and all monitoring and appropriate monitoring should be, and care should be given to recognizing that.
Okay, and then maybe, you know, always ensuring good communication about the procedure and process with parents and patients when possible.
And I think that sounds like it did that, but yes.
I know, but we're just trying to offer some guidance and support, right?
And I would add, and care should be given to ensure the expectations of the parents are managed.
Right, and that's kind of on that communication end. And so I agree with both you. We don't necessarily know what exactly happened, but I think just from a letter of concern perspective, it's offering just our guidance and thoughts about how maybe they could do it better, right? April, are you okay with all of that?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. So we are recommending a letter of concern for this licensee based on the discussion that we just had. Is there a second for that?
Harris seconds.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Tukami?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Marahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for a letter of recommendation with the contents as discussed. Thank you all. We are now on agenda item 4B4, case number 2024-00385. And Skip, I just want to turn this over to you. What would you do?
I would definitely find a disciplinary for abandonment, poor implant management or implant care, poor management of the complications. I think there's some question about whether this doctor is still practicing in Arizona, but I definitely would think about restricting practice until some CEs in implantology and management of complications.
Yeah. I had licensure revocation question mark, but maybe that was – I didn't understand how this could have happened this way. So.
Well, and I mean it was a – it was an aggressive technique that was managed poorly, and then the complications, it was just totally lost to follow-up that resulted in severe complications. I don't like the fact that it's kind of a fly-by-night, you know, like these are not patients that can be managed, you know, sporadically and as you flit in and out of state. I have a real problem with this case. I'm not sure about revocation, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I agree with you. The dentist said they were not practicing in Arizona, but their rationale for not getting rid of their license is because of what they went through to get it. So, which I guess in itself makes sense. I just really struggled with how this patient was managed, but then, even going back to our previous case discussion, it seemed like there was some discussion with the patient that they were sort of accepting of some of this. Like, why did they travel all the way to California and agree to their own out-of-pocket payment when that seemed like that was pretty well discussed with them? You know what I mean?
Because they didn't have a choice. They wanted to stick with their doctor, and they were desperate to do whatever they needed to do to stay with the person that they found credible. And maybe that was a bad choice, but it's understandable why they were trying to do it.
And did you have a sense of who, if there's a way to say responsible, or just maybe who it happened with? Who do you think the fracture happened with, Dr. S or Dr. W?
Well, but Dr. W was trying to manage the complication afterwards. So even if the iatrogenic fracture occurred during that effort to fix the previous problem, that wouldn't be outside the standard of care. Actually, that would be entirely predictable and understandable. So I don't think Dr. W is going to be responsible for even if ultimately the fracture occurred on his watch, the issue was set in motion well before he was there.
Okay. And then also, just for my edification, is it pretty common that if you have a implant that goes through the cortical plate, as it did in this case, because of the rationale used by this initial surgeon, to go there and trim it off like that, it's not out of bounds to do something like that?
I mean, leaving a piece of implant behind because you felt like it was the lesser of evils, I think, is a completely reasonable choice. I don't have a problem leaving a small piece of implant behind. But I do have a problem with how these implants were allowed to fester and destroy bone and undermine what was already a fairly compromised case to begin with. Had this been followed closely and managed closely, I would suspect that the complications would have been much better managed and likely the fracture would have been averted.
Okay. So it looks like we have a violation of 32.12.01.01.14. Did you identify anything else?
Abandonment.
Is that on? Is that a separate?
I think that, isn't that a separate? You guys are better at the numbers than I am.
Yeah. Well, we have to ask Deb.
Yeah.
Is there an abandonment separate one, Deb?
Not on our typical list.
I think it's just all encompassing in 14, isn't it?
I don't see it either right now, Dr. Puto. If you just want to reference it, but then also reference 14, and then I'll get that figured out for you.
That's fine. Cynthia, did you have? I just saw your.
This is April.
I don't think it's me. Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. April, go ahead.
Rule for patient abandonment would be 4-11-501. So to reference that in a violation, you probably have to.
So it's in rule, not
it's in rule. Yeah. So I think Seamus can help you find the connecting dots through violation.
All right. So we have a violation of statute identified as 32.12.01.01.14, and then we just need the rule violation for the abandonment, and we'll just get that correct so we can transmit that to the board. Does that work for you, Skip?
Absolutely, yeah.
And are there any other identified violations by the committee? All right, so April, you want to give that please, that rule reference again?
That rule reference is R4-11-501F.
F?
Correct.
Okay. So we have identified violations of 32.12.01.014 and R4-11-501F. Is there a second to that?
Harris seconds.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Antias?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of those two violations. With regards to a disciplinary action recommendation as introduced by Dr. Harris, Skip, what would that look like?
I was thinking something like restriction of practice in surgical care until 40 hours of CE in ethics, implant therapy, and management of surgical complications.
Restriction of practice until completion of 40 CEUs. And what was it in?
Ethics, implant, surgical care, and management of surgical complications.
Implant surgery and management of complications. Okay. Anybody want to add to Dr. Harris's recommendation? Are we good with it? And if we're good with it, I'll take a second.
MTS second.
Okay. So we have a disciplinary recommendation of 40 CEUs in ethics, implant surgery, and management of complications with a restriction of practice until all CE is completed. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Zahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that disciplinary action recommendation.
Dr. Caputo?
Yes.
I apologize. This is Seamus. I just wanted to interrupt real quickly, especially for Deb, our resident statute expert here. When we are, and I want to say this is different, when you are specifically looking at a rule that's not mentioned in 120101, it's going to be 1263A4, which states, committing or aiding directly or indirectly a provision of or noncompliance with any provision of this chapter or any or of any rules adopted by the board pursuant to this chapter. So you would cite that with whatever your rule is. And we'll make sure that gets done with this one. But for the future, if you just write down 1263A4, that will direct you to the rules.
And I take it it's 32-1263?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Cool. Let me just look at that. You said A4?
Yep.
32-1263 A. Gotcha. Okay. Very good. I'll keep that for future reference. So we'd reference that first and then the rule.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. So we are now on agenda item 4B5. Case number 2024-00394. So, comments or thoughts by the committee? I'm looking at a violation of 32-1201, 01, 14, and 24. Anything else or otherwise by the committee? And if not, is there a second?
Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Intiaz?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Marahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of those violations. I direct the committee to page 3763 in our packets. I would propose a disciplinary recommendation to include 20 CEUs through the credits cares program and diagnosis, treatment planning, record keeping, insurance billing, crown and bridge, treatment and restoration. Discussion. Thoughts, comments, or otherwise, or a second.
Extraction complications? I don't know if I'm the one to comment on that. But.
Nope, that's fine. Management of complications.
Yeah, Harris seconds. I couldn't agree more.
Extraction complications. Complications.
And failure to refer.
Yeah, referral.
Okay. And appropriate referral. Okay, so we have a disciplinary recommendation, action recommendation to include 20 CEUs through the Credits CARES program and diagnosis, treatment planning, record keeping, insurance billing, crown and bridge, treatment and restoration, management of extraction complications, and appropriate referral. And still sounds good to second, Skip?
Yes, sir. Harris seconds.
Okay, further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
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 Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Manahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that disciplinary action recommendation. I didn't see any financial implications on this. Did anybody else? Okay. So thank you all very much. We are now on agenda item 4B6, case number 2024-00398. And I was just looking at a letter of concern for this, though I'll open it up for discussion with the committee.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I actually had for dismissals. So.
Anybody else?
I had that dismissal too.
Sorry.
Yeah. So same thing, dismissal.
Okay.
I had dismissal versus letter.
Okay.
And I guess my question is regarding that is just, for me anyway, it was a limited exam. I need to ask everyone here is, if it's a limited exam, do you then not take a health history or consent or do any exam? What are you exempt from doing at that point?
That's kind of where I was at, Cynthia, so good question.
Well, I realize that some of those can be, I don't want to say shortchanged, but maybe as unnecessary in other times, but I don't know if it is.
Well, my thought was that regardless of the type of appointment, they should do a comprehensive, and prior to treatment, they should have a comprehensive medical history, right?
I mean, they're not giving anesthetic, but yes, I mean, it's an older gentleman. At least a consent. I mean, at least ask the question. Even if it's not, there should be one or two questions at least asked to that. That'd be me, but I'm happy to, it's not something I do here. So what do people do if it's an emergency or limited exam?
Yeah, so to our clinicians who don't see patients like Dr. Fukami and I do, what are your thoughts?
Well, in my practice, we have to take medical history on every patient. Even if it's a denture patient, we have to fill out, complete paperwork. Every patient gets the same paperwork to fill. My understanding from this case that it says here, not provided as part of the record. So I don't know if it's not provided to the investigator, but they had it or they never took it. That I just didn't understand that part. So I really didn't concentrate on it since the investigator didn't really talk about it much in detail.
Sure. And what you'll find as you do this more, is you'll appreciate how the different investigators put their reports together. And this particular investigator, that's kind of how they do their reports. So it's just a little bit different, whereas you'll find another investigator that goes into great detail on each and every report. It's just a little bit of a nuanced difference. I don't know that it's good, bad, or indifferent. It's just it is different by the investigator. But typically, they're usually this particular investigator is looking directly at the issue at hand. I'll just throw out there for the committee, I was just going to say that a letter of concern regarding completing a comprehensive medical history as well as a exam, including documentation of hard and soft tissue findings, as well as planned treatment should be supported by clinical and radiographic findings. But to Dr. Fukami's point, if the feeling is that based on this being a limited exam, that's not merited, I'm okay with that as well. So I heard multiple people say dismissal. Is there maintenance of that approach? Is anybody inclined to do a letter of concern containing what I just mentioned or not?
I think that's a very reasonable thought. I didn't perceive this as lacking that material, and if it is lacking that material, then a letter of concern is very appropriate.
Okay. Other thoughts?
If everyone wants to look at page 4009, I'm happy to. I'd love to hear opinions on this one because it comes up more than once. Yeah.
Absolutely. Who is that? Was that you? Oh, go ahead. Mindy, is that you?
Did you call on me, Dr. Caputo, Dr. Cutler?
No. We did not. Thank you, though, Julie. We were just talking about the different types of investigators and getting to know them as we do this more and more.
I just want to point out something in the medical history. Not history, but the chart note, just to help the members. It's on page 4008.
Yep.
It says right here, MHX reviewed. No recent history of cold or fever. I'm not sure if that helps.
No, I appreciate that, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they indicate that there was some sort of, I think, had this happened, this could have been more helpful to this situation. But again, I'm not strongly attached to that. So we've got Dr. Harris okay with the letter of concern. Dr. Fukami seems okay with it. Anybody else, or should we just push for dismissal and move on?
This is Kappas. I'm okay with a letter of concern because if there was a medical history taken but it was not provided, then that's also a gap, you know, to remind them.
It's a non-disciplinary action. It's just a little heads up for the practitioner to, hey, how can we help you practice better, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right, let's do this. Let's do a roll call for letter of concern, see where we end up.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, so motion carries for letter of concern. And then April, what I am proposing for content, just to kind of repeat what I said earlier, regardless of the type of appointment, prior to treatment, a comprehensive medical exam must be completed and reviewed, as well as a comprehensive dental examination, including documentation of hard and soft tissues. Planned dental treatment should be supported by clinical and radiographic findings. That seem okay for everybody? Anybody have any heartache about that?
I have a little heartache about, for a limited exam, to have a comprehensive exam.
Okay, how about a...
I think it's more the health history that bothered me.
Okay, so we can skip the comprehensive exam?
Yes.
And do you like the part where planned treatment should be supported by?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we'll just say this.
Can I add something to it?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Let me just say the corrected based on what Deb recommended, and then we'll get back to you, Marty, okay? So regardless of type of appointment, prior to treatment, a comprehensive medical history must be completed and reviewed. Planned dental treatment should be supported by clinical and radiographic findings. All right, Marty, go ahead.
One thing I noticed from the clinical radiographs, they really didn't show the apex at all. So all the teeth that he did fillings on, you don't know if they have infection. There's calcified canal. So it needs to be a diagnosable x-ray for him to rule out any big problems of infections for him to do fillings.
Right. So that's why I said that the way I did. Planned dental treatment should be supported by clinical and radiographic findings.
Maybe you put it in the word diagnostic radiographic findings.
By clinical and diagnostic radiographic findings. Does that help, Marty?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, we'll do that. Diagnostic. All right, so regardless of type of appointment, prior to treatment, a comprehensive medical history must be completed and reviewed. Planned dental treatment should be supported by clinical and diagnostic radiographic findings. Sound good?
I like it.
And April, you got that okay?
I did, thank you.
Okay. So that's what we'll propose to the board to consider for the letter of concern we approved. All right. We are now on agenda item 4B8, case number 2024-00413. And I was proposing a letter of concern for this as well, but let's open it up for discussion and see where the rest of the committee is at.
I had letter of concern as well.
Okay. Anybody else?
Letter of concern.
Okay. So let's go ahead and do a roll call on letter of concern on this case. Yes.
Yes.
Ali?
We're talking about case 13, correct?
413, correct.
Yeah, I was...
You mean agenda number 8.
Oh, I'm sorry. Agenda item 4B8, case number 2024-00413.
Yeah, I was looking at dismissal, so I don't know how to respond.
You can say, you can vote against it if you don't agree with letter of concern.
Okay, so no?
Okay, perfect.
Ashari?
Yes.
Connie?
Yes.
Yes.
Chris?
Chavez?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Manari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the recommendation of a letter of concern. I was proposing something similar to our previous one, something along the lines of, prior to treatment, a comprehensive dental examination, including documentation of hard and soft tissue findings, must be completed. Planned dental treatment should be supported by clinical and radiographic findings. Happy to add diagnostic. Deb, what were your thoughts?
Along those same lines, yeah.
So you're good with that?
Yeah, so it was more about the records, yeah.
Yeah. So... any thoughts, comments about the content of that? Everybody okay? Or anybody want to change anything?
Harris, seconds.
Okay. So we have a letter of concern with the aforementioned content. April, did you get it okay?
I did. Thank you.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Lucari?
Yes.
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 Martin?
Yes.
Lucari? Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that letter of concern with the content provided. We are now on agenda item 4B9, case number 2024-00414. Comments, thoughts by the committee regarding violations? I was looking at violations of 32, 12, 01, 01, 14, and 24.
Yes, sir. Here are seconds.
Okay. Other comments? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Matias?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of those violations. For the committee, I'm looking at page 4386 in the packet. I'll just start with where my head was at and see if folks agree or disagree, but I was looking at licensure revocation. So let's just start there and have a discussion. Thoughts, comments? I found this to be a really troubling case on how the dentist managed it and was involved, particularly just at some point leaving with what appears to be no known forwarding address, or at least no one could get a hold of them. So anyways, what do others think?
This is Harris. I had poor restorative, failed restorative, very poor records, and abandonment. So I was going to go for ethics and a bunch of CEs.
Okay. You didn't see revocation in the future for this licensing?
I don't know. Without a pattern.
No, I understand. I was really troubled by how the licensing handled this whole case.
There's a whole lot of abandonment in all of these cases. It's become a more common thing.
Very unfortunate. Okay. So you're seeing disciplinary action, as you discussed. Anybody else? Any other thoughts?
This is Martin.
Go ahead, Katie.
Similar to Skip, I was feeling lots and lots of CE here.
Okay. So I think I don't disagree with the abandonment. What do you think, Katie?
It does. Yeah, I agree with the abandonment issue. There is, what is that, on page 4376, there wasn't an address given, but, you know, the fact that they had no one could get in touch, I think, is a problem. So.
Yeah, and I think it is in that communication from the office manager?
Yes.
Where it says no one is comfortable. I mean, it's about maybe providing the paperwork. So, I mean, it just seemed like there was just this disconnect with the dentist and the office, and there was just,
right.
It just didn't feel like this had a good vibe to it. So, all right. So I think we would need to add the abandonment then, as was previously mentioned by Seamus. So I think that would be, let's see, where am I at here? Okay. So it'd be the addition of 32-12-63-D-4 followed by R-4-11-501F. So, Dr. Harris moved for an abandonment issue here, and it was seconded by Dr. Martin. So let's do a roll call on the abandonment. And this would be a violation of 32-12-63-D-4, referencing R-4-11-501F.
And aren't we going to do some restorative and some record keeping and some ethics?
We'll get to that. I just want to stick with the violations for right now, and then we'll get to the disciplinary recommendation.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Okay. For the abandonment, you are talking about that the doctor did not see the patient or did not provide care for her or that she did not really respond to the board. Because if you look at page, there on page 4384, she had a narrative for Delta Dental because I think they stopped on payments or, you know, that the patient went to another provider. See, in the last, they never came with any question or discussion or treatment until after receiving care from another dentist. So when do we say that the doctor abandoned the patient?
I think the larger issue here that folks are referencing is that all of a sudden the doctor just left the practice without notification or otherwise, and so effectively leaving patients who are in treatment without a treating dentist. And I think that's the issue that's being referenced as far as the abandonment is concerned. So that's where I think the genesis of that identification is coming from.
Okay, I see.
So, having said that, and Ali, the way all this works, just so you know, right, we're not making any decisions because we are not statutorily charged with that opportunity. So all this committee does is make recommendations. That's why you hear me say that over and over again. So we make these recommendations to the board. The board then decides if they agree or disagree with the recommendations that are being made. That being said, we don't want to obviously just recommend anything, but we don't have to make or not make recommendations based on any one thing because we're not ultimately making the decision. Second, just like you did earlier, if you don't agree when a vote is being taken, you vote whatever way you feel towards that particular issue. That's so.
I understand. Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Any other comments, thoughts about adding that violation? Go ahead, Cynthia.
So I went back and forth on this one too, and I think Madi has a point. Was are we abandoning the patient or are we abandoning the practice? And so when I look through the chart, if you look at page 4411, there, what it looked like through this series of texts that he sent to the office, it looks like the licensee did abruptly leave the practice, but it implied in this text message that it might have been for family issues. And that's why the office manager made a comment somewhere along the line here that they had to leave or they stopped, coming to the office abruptly, even though patients were scheduled, within the time period that he was supposed to be there. And so that's what I originally thought was the situation.
What was the page number again, Cynthia?
Page 4411.
Thanks.
But then, while I was absorbing that, though, when you look at the rest of the report, it's that even despite that, I think that they would still, though, respond to the investigator when the investigator reached out or when the office reached out to them to say, hey, can you follow up with this patient or respond to this complaint?
Yeah.
I just think that there's ample opportunity even subsequent to that to say.
I think
there
that's.
Were, yeah. So
exactly
that's where I. Okay. Just want to say that. So, Molly, that's where I got a little tangled up, but that's what I think it is, where we all had the question.
There still is a responsibility, or as you said, an obligation to respond. And I think to just walk away, regardless of the circumstances, somebody has to know something, and that is at least a professional obligation that you have to your patients, right? So, all right. So we have a violation of 3212.63.D4 referencing R411.501.F. That's been moved and seconded. Let's do a roll call.
Anthony Seamus has his hand up.
Just real quick, guys. Dr. Buda, I just want to say it was A4, not D4.
Oh, A4. Sorry.
Just for the record. No, you're all good.
Nope, I'll make that correction, and I appreciate it. I said the wrong thing. Perfect. Roll call on 3212-63A4, referencing R411501F. Thank you, Seamus.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Alahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of that violation, which will be added to 3212.101, 14, and 24, which were identified earlier. So now we're on to recommendations. So this is a disciplinary recommendation, Dr. Harris, correct?
Yes, sir.
And what were you thinking?
I was thinking something along the lines of 20 hours in treatment planning, diagnosis and treatment planning, restorative dentistry, ethics and record keeping.
Katie, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that sounds good.
So diagnosis, treatment planning, restorative dentistry, and what else did you say?
Ethics and record keeping.
Yeah.
Ethics and record keeping. Any other thoughts, comments, or otherwise from the committee? Or is there a second to Dr. Harris's recommendation?
Martin second.
Martin seconds. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
MGS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Lahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that disciplinary action recommendation. Thank you all. I also identified restitution in the amount of $5,737, which I believe is back to the patient. Is there confirmation by others on that?
Yes.
Deb?
Deb, you're silent.
Mindy, you said yes?
I had a question about the restitution and what it was based on.
Okay.
What was the page that was on again?
Let me go to it. Thank you for saying that. So I'm going to start, Deb, with page 4386.
So that figure actually is a quote to retreat by another practitioner, 5,737?
Right.
So that's not really restitution. That's a retreatment of the case. So when I looked at this, I had that question and go, well, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I'm with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I couldn't determine the restitution. So the appropriate restitution.
May I chime in on that?
Yeah.
Same process you all are looking at. So page 4373.
Okay.
And at the end, bottom of that page, it looks like Delta had identified on the ledger, provided ledger, that the member had made payments totaling 5223. Do you see that?
Yes.
And then but they'd already been given a check
for 1736.
So
which brought it down to the 3484?
3487.40.
So 34.87. So that's what you found as restitution amount.
Correct.
All right. So are you okay with that, Deb?
Absolutely. That's good.
All right. So I'll correct that. I'm fine. And I'm with you and I appreciate it. I was sort of wanted to flesh that out. So we will change restitution to 34.87.40, you said, Cynthia?
I think it's 84.40, isn't it? 84.40.
37, 34, 84, 40. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I have 3487.40.
Okay. All right. Anybody want to do the math real quick on those two numbers? So oh, we
I
have
think, I think she's
52,
right.
23, 40 minus 17, 36. What are we getting?
$34.87.40.
Okay, 3487.40 then is the recommendation for restitution. Is there a second on that recommendation? And this is back to the patient. Is there a second?
Cap a second.
Okay. So we have a restitution recommendation in the amount of $3,487.47 to the patient. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Manahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that restitution recommendation. Thank you for working through that. All right. We are now on agenda item 4B11, case number 2024-00420. Comments, thoughts?
This is another abandonment one where we're going to need to figure out a refund, but I've struggled with figuring out the refund.
It's interesting. I didn't see the abandonment part. And when you said the refund, because are you thinking of the practice versus the practitioner?
I don't know. That one kind of pickled my noodle as I was looking at it. I just put a bunch of question marks because I couldn't really decide.
I actually was looking at non-disciplinary to the practitioner. I think the larger issues are on the entity. Anybody else feel one way or the other about that?
I feel really the entity should have provided a practitioner or a clinician to take over those cases or referred them to somebody that could.
Mm-hmm.
Or basically, I mean, in this case, they refunded her the money to pursue most likely her case somewhere else. So I don't see an abandonment from the clinician because, you know, he's working as an employee in that clinic. If he leaves, he leaves. The clinic needs to provide another doctor to take over these cases. But the patient had the money refunded also, according to the complaint. So
I think there was still a residual amount out there.
Oh, no, they sent her to collection for some.
Oh, right.
Yes, so I'm not sure what it is. Let me see.
I thought that wasn't resolved, though, because she still was getting notification that amount was due.
So it's to me, it looked like an entity issue rather than a clinician issue. But that's my thought.
All right. I was sort of there with you as well. Anybody else thoughts about
Yeah, but I mean, where do we let the licensee off the hook in these corporate schemes where they come in, they establish a doctor-patient relationship, and then they walk out the door and they say, "Oh, I'm sure somebody else will take care of it." I'm sorry, I don't buy that.
What I was proposing for the licensee, Skip, was non-disciplinary with 8 CEUs and diagnosis, treatment planning, and record keeping. I didn't think that the licensee was not without some responsibility of what occurred here. But I felt like it was the entity that had a larger responsibility to the patient in this particular case. I'm not disagreeing with you. Having said that, other committee members feel similarly to Dr. Harris on the issue of patient abandonment.
So I had a question, and maybe it's because I think that I'm not really clear on what happened at all in this case. So if you look at page 4775, you can go to that and you'll see there's a letter from the attorney where they eventually determine the fee. I think the argument being made by them is that actually the services were indeed rendered, and what she owes to the practice is for services that were actually confirmed to have been rendered, minus, I think, an error that was the $350 error about the implant. And that's a reflection on his poor record keeping, which I think warrants either a letter of concern or non-disciplinary, yes. But regarding the entity itself, at least what's spelled out here, which again, I can't confirm otherwise, is that they have reviewed their records and said the services are rendered, patient was charged, she had a consent form for it, that she was charged for it, she paid on care credit. She probably didn't understand that she actually had the surgery done. I'm not sure why. But then the practice, when she came back for follow-up or additional treatment, that dentist was no longer there. So, again, she thought the treatment wasn't rendered, or the treatment wasn't complete, rather. Refused to pay. The office paid care credit on her behalf, and then they sent her to collections for it. But I don't see it written here that the treatment was services were not rendered, and that's where I'm confused.
Okay, and I think in closing that last paragraph is they're even though they're agreeing to the amount that's still owed, the $2,230, they're willing to discount even
that.
Okay.
Yes. So that's I thought that's how it was left, and I'm not maybe this letter didn't make it into the investigator file in time.
From what you're saying, though, since that's a valid balance, is what you're saying.
I thought so, but again, because of the timing of it, maybe it didn't make it into the investigative report. And I don't know if there's a follow-up question here that we just haven't been able to ask yet.
See, I read this differently. This is Harris. I read that the implant basically fell out on its own and that it was never actually removed, and that they were planning on doing treatment and she prepaid for it. And when she returned for the treatment, the doctor wasn't there, so she got nothing. And they're still chasing her for the treatment that she didn't have done. So maybe I misread this case, but that's how it came across to me.
No, I think I was kind of there as well, Skip. I think I was with you, but I'm also looking at what Cynthia is bringing up. But I think the issue is that's obviously coming from the attorney on behalf of their client, right?
I understand.
But I
don't know that
there is a clinical issue at play here.
Well, I think, and again, you guys have to tell me if this makes sense in terms of the money, but the fee that's here, the $2,000 plus is for osseous surgery, 4 quadrants that was done at a specified time. And there are notes to reflect that in the chart, even though I think the investigator commented that the notes are substandard. So, but it is there. The implant issue was a subsequent appointment that was mistakenly in the chart that they subsequently corrected, and they removed that amount from this owed amount. So at this point, I think the remaining balance is strictly for the osseous surgery. It doesn't have to do with the implant. Again, I don't know. I'm not the person that probably knows, understands how this billing, if it reflects accurately. Someone else can take a look at it.
There was a question about the osseous surgery being done because the treatment notes didn't indicate or describe those procedures being performed, right?
No, it was in there. It just was. They said it was underwhelming how it was documented. So again, if someone thinks that the osseous surgery was not done, then that makes more sense relative to the whole thing. I just don't know.
This is
if that question's asked. Yeah.
On page 4746 is the note that says osseous surgery 6 to 9 and 27, but it's literally, that's all it says.
Right. But it also says implant removal number 2 was site
yes.
preservation. To Dr. Harris's point, the implant, that implant was never removed, right, Skip? Isn't that what you were saying?
It's not entirely clear to me, but yeah, I think that, that this was more like a treatment plan than it was actually something that got done.
Yeah, well, on the page above it, where, so again, 4275, there's like a little bit more where they do their best to describe osseous surgery, like osseous resection, festooned, high-speed handpiece, and it says implant number 2 came out when patient removed overdenture. The granulated site and 2 to 4 millimeter sinus communication detected clinically. Repaired sinus as follows.
Right.
So it's interesting then, like, the next note says implant removal with site preservation. I think they're just saying because the implant had come out in the patient's hand or, like, with the denture.
And I think that's kind of to my comment about recommending record-keeping CE for this practitioner.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Is that I think that's part of what we're struggling with. Just for staff, do we know if this is a registered entity?
Yes.
They are?
Yes, they are.
Okay. So where are we on violations to the licensee versus not? I really didn't see any like I said, I was going to recommend a non-disciplinary action. So what are the thoughts on disciplinary versus non-disciplinary?
I can be talking to a non-disciplinary.
Okay. And I was going to propose a non-disciplinary action to include 8 CEs, CEUs, and diagnosis, treatment planning, and record keeping.
Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Anthea?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Alright.
Yes.
Okay, so recommendation for a non-disciplinary action as described is approved. So we'll move that forward. Now, regarding the entity, I identified violations of 32.12.63 D, 9, and 15. Is there agreement about that? Or discussion? And just...
I would second.
Okay. So,
but if we're doing non-disciplinary, do we have to find violations?
This is for the entity.
Yeah.
So entities, we don't, they just get fined. So we'd have to find the we'd have to identify a violation and approve it to then levy a fine. Separate from the provider, basically. Nine is obtaining a fee by fraud or misrepresentation. That's what I was looking at. Or willfully or intentionally filing a fraudulent claim. It was more obtaining a fee by misrepresentation in that statute. And then 15 is engaging in any conduct or practice that constitutes a danger to the health, welfare, or safety of the patient or public. So that's 9 and 15 and 3263. Were you still good with seconding that, Skip?
Absolutely, yep.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
So I understand. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So this is so that they can be fined but has nothing to do with restitution?
Restitution will hand separately. But, yes, this would just be fines. Correct. They are two separate issues. You're right on that.
And we were specifically talking about because as far as the billing aspect goes, is the osseous surgery or the implant?
I think there's other things involved as well. I just think there was a lot of confusion and there's enough of a pattern within the description that I think there was misrepresentation of fees. So that's where I'm at. And again, as we've said before, it would be for the board to accept or otherwise. But yes, that's the point here, correct.
Okay.
Okay. Other discussion? Roll call.
Kakura?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Sakani?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Tempest?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, so motion carries for the finding of those violations against the entity identified in this matter. That would involve a fine of $4,000, $2,000 for each violation. Additionally, I was looking at restitution in that amount of $2,930, and I know we've been discussing that. So is there a sense of the committee of, is there a restitution amount or is there not?
I don't think there is. I think they're trying to straighten out the account as to what's been charged and what's appropriate, but I don't think it warrants a restitution.
Okay. Anybody else thoughts on restitution or no restitution?
I agree with Deb.
Okay. Skip?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. So then we'll take off restitution and we'll just stick with the recommendation of a fine for $4,000 with respect to those two violations. Is there a second?
Harris seconds.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Kakura?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Tommy?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Travis?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for the recommendation of a fine for the entity PTO in the amount of $4,000. Thank you all. It's just a little bit after three. Do we just need a stretch break or everybody okay?
I need a quick break.
Okay. Let's take a 8-minute break and we'll reconvene at 3:15. Thank you. Okay, it is 3:15. So let's just see where we're at with our committee and do a roll call.
Caputo?
Here.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Here.
Sorry?
Here.
Bukani?
Here.
Imtiaz?
Here.
Kappas?
Here.
Martin?
Here.
Motihari?
Here.
Okay. During our break, Dr. Harris informed me that he has to leave at 4, so I may jump around a little bit, but let's just see how we do. For the time being, we are now on agenda item 4B12, case number 2024-00422. Thoughts, comments, or otherwise by the committee? So I was looking at violations of 32.12.0.1.0.1, 14, and 24.
Yes, Harris seconds.
Any other comments or thoughts by the committee?
I had this for non-disciplinary, but maybe.
Well, let's see how the vote goes. So this would be voting on violations and then based on the vote, we would determine if this was a disciplinary recommendation or not. So, any other comments? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Bukali?
No.
Chaz?
Yes.
Travis?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for the finding of those violations. So this will be a disciplinary action recommendation. I would direct the committee to page 4,866 in the packet. And I'm proposing a disciplinary recommendation to include 15 CEUs through the Credits CARES program in record keeping, extraction techniques, and post-op complication management, including referral.
Harris, I was going to suggest the same, but at 8 hours.
Okay. Thoughts about the amount of CE then in those areas, 15 or 8? I think that amount of ground, probably 15 would be helpful, Skip, especially since record keeping is involved.
You talk me into it.
Okay. Other comments? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Bukali?
I would abstain.
Okay. MTS?
Yes.
Travis?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for disciplinary action recommendation for 15 CEUs as described previously. We are now on. Oh, and I didn't see any financial issues with that one. Did anybody else? Okay. I just wanted to verify. All right. We are now on agenda item 4B13, case number 2024-00448. I was looking at a violation here. I just wanted to ask if anybody else agreed. It was just kind of how they were working with their staff, right? So I was looking at 32.12.63.D.17, which is engaging in a practice by which a dental hygienist, dental therapist, or dental assistant which would apply in this particular situation, exceeds the scope of practice or restrictions included in a written collaborative practice agreement. And I think the thing I was tripping on was that written collaborative practice agreement. So that's what I was kind of at, but what does the committee think?
Yeah, I had the same problem with this. the exact same problem, actually, and looking at what you could do. I think it needs to be addressed. It is clearly a violation of some kind, not allowing staff to do things without the appropriate credentials to do them. If the one that you quoted, Dr. Caputo, doesn't apply, we could use D14.
Hey, Seamus, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Can you help us understand that particular statute?
Yes, I can.
I got tripped up on the written collaborative practice agreement.
And that's
D17.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So basically, these were assistants that were doing procedures that they were not certified to do, and the practice was allowing it.
You know, that is interesting because a dental assistant never has a written collaborative practice agreement. A dental therapist would, and a dental hygienist would. We call it different. But a dental assistant would never. So since the dental assistant is mentioned in that,
maybe then it doesn't apply.
It doesn't apply. And that's how I'm looking at it, too.
But the first half of the phrase may, right, exceeds the scope of practice.
Yeah, right.
Yes, I think it would.
So
and
that's
it is an or statement, or restrictions.
Correct. I agree. You guys seem like you're on the right track.
Okay, so we'll stick with that one then. So, Deb, you want to second that?
I second it.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Tommy?
Yes.
Antares?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for the finding of that violation. That would indicate a recommendation for a fine of $2,000. Is there a second?
There a second.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Connie?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Yes.
Motion carries for the recommendation of that fine in the amount of $2,000. Thank you. We're now on agenda item 4B14, case number 2024-00449. I was just looking at a letter of concern here. And so we'll open that up there and see where the rest of the committee is at.
Yeah, this is Harris. I agree.
So this also indicates that a dental assistant is polishing without certification. Why do we find it necessary to penalize another practice, but we find just a letter of concern for a practitioner who's doing the same thing?
Well, was it as defined here as it was in the other one?
Yes, it was.
All right. Do you have a page reference? Because I don't know that I saw it that way, and that's why I'm recommending it. So.
And I would agree with you. This sounded like somebody who was trying to make trouble looking for anything, making an anonymous complaint about maybe somebody doing something in Sharp's containers, you know, being under sinks. I don't know. This one didn't strike me the same way as the one before.
I I was looking specifically at, yeah, the shards container, some of that other stuff. And regardless of the disgruntled nature of how it comes forward, if I'm not mistaken, the, let's see, let me look at the conclusions that were cited.
It does say that the
dental assistant in question, according to the consultant, does not hold any Arizona certifications of any kind. And even the doctor never disputed that they weren't polishing. They were making the case that because this person was qualified and had the credentials necessary in Texas, that it would apply here. And it doesn't apply here. So I felt like it was upheld.
Well, I don't see, I guess, based on exactly that, I don't see that as the same at all. I think that there was a misunderstanding, but I don't know that, I mean, they knew that this assistant had training in this area. They just didn't realize the application here and the recognition of failure to verify that certification. I guess that's where I see the difference. So that's where I'm at, but I certainly respect your position. Are there other thoughts?
I think a lot of, well, I shouldn't go there, I guess, but I believe that a lot of practitioners claim not to know things and when they should, and then they use that as an excuse for this
right,
kind of
thing. In this particular case, this assistant did have training that the dentist did believe was appropriate and applicable here versus not having any training. I think you can at least, from that perspective, say that that can be concluded from this investigation or not.
Yes, I can. I can conclude that.
Okay, so let's do this. We have a recommendation for a letter of concern seconded by Harris. Other discussion? Roll call.
Would you instead propose a non-disciplinary?
I wouldn't do anything other than I just was going to give them a proverbial heads up with a letter of concern. I don't really think they did anything wrong.
Well, I would go with a non-disciplinary, something on risk management or ethics or something and their obligation to know the law. Okay. I felt a little bit stronger about this because of their staunch, belief that just because they are trained and qualified, that this should not be a problem.
Well, I think it is still a problem.
It's kind of that.
Yeah, but you're saying staunch belief, but you don't know that, right? You didn't. I mean, they seem to be just of the position that was acceptable, but I don't know that they said anywhere that they staunchly believed it.
Okay, my words. I'm sorry.
I understand. I'm just saying we don't want to interpret too much from what we're doing. Let's just go back to. Let's take a roll call vote on the recommendation for a letter of concern since it's already been moved and seconded, and let's see where we end up.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Bukami?
No.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Chavez?
No.
Martin?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so motion for a recommendation of letter of concern carries. Okay, as far as the content of the letter, I would propose the following. Make the dentist aware of requirements for dental assistant scope of practice and OSHA requirements for sharps container locations. Anything else anybody would add or propose? Is there a second for that proposed language?
There are seconds.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Chavez?
No.
Martin?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for that content recommendation, letter of concern. Thank you all.
Dr. Kahuna, that was me. So I know that you just voted on the letter of concern, and I know that I am staff, but if it's any consolation, I would like an opportunity to say something, because this comes up often. And I'm not asking you to change your opinion. I'm just asking you to just hear me out.
Yeah, go ahead.
So this happens quite often, and on even little things like this. But I think that Deb was trying to do the job for everybody to basically state that this person didn't have any – they had a credential in another state. That doesn't mean they had the credential in Arizona. But it's almost akin to saying – if you're licensed in Texas, you can come to Arizona and start practicing as a dentist because you didn't know you didn't have to have a license. And I think that that's what Deb was trying to point out, that right now that is what it is, the law. And just because you don't know the law doesn't mean that you're assumed to know the law if you practice dentistry. And I think that when we start getting on the slippery slope of ignoring certain things is what the concern is from a staff perspective too. I would not be an advocate for the dentist to say, I think that they just didn't know. A friend of mine said that they got pulled over for speeding, and they said, my wife told me the speed limit was 45. I didn't know it was 35. That is not an excuse to get out of the ticket. So I think that that's the struggle. And we should let the licensee be an advocate for themselves as opposed to the committee.
And I totally hear you, Ryan. I think I do see some differences here. And I think for the most part, the committee did too. I'm not taking away anything from what Deb said. I guess my only response initially was I didn't see it as the same as the previous case. And there were multiple people that had no certification or training at all. Whereas this person did have something. And I guess my only pushback a little bit would be I see having training and certification in coronal polishing a little bit different than being a licensed dentist, right, who's going to do extractions or administer local anesthetic. And these people, these assistants, as the dentist said, are under direct supervision, which was documented. To that end, I guess part of our challenge, and I hear everything, is, as Seamus tells us, look at these as case by case and not try to infer or imply other things that we don't necessarily know. So I get it. I just think I'm looking at this case. You have one assistant that was doing X, and the understanding was that their training from another place would carry over. I agree with you. It doesn't take away what they should or should not have known. But I think isn't that the point of the letter of concern, is to say, hey, listen, there are rules and requirements in place, and you fell below that, and we're reminding you in hopefully a supportive, understanding way that this is what you should be doing. So I maybe I'm splitting the hair, but that's kind of the way I was looking at it, not taking away anything that you said and certainly appreciating what Deb was saying. So I hear you. And I guess the only reason why we're continuing to have this discussion is because the next case is the same thing. These are two dentists that practice together, and so therefore – the complaint is lodged against both of them. So, having deliberated and recommended on 4B14, we are now on 4B15, case number 2024-00450, and it's the exact same complaint. So,
and I saw this a little bit differently because this is an associate dentist who may or may not have any authority over,
sure. And that's fair.
Getting those credentials and being responsible for that. So I did see this as a possible letter of concern to make sure that whoever they're working for or working with, has the proper credentials.
And I understand that. Yeah, I hear you. So I was considering a letter of concern with the same exact language on this particular case. So open for discussion by the committee.
Harris,
and the same as staff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I heard you both at the same time say the same thing. So seconded by Harris. Further discussion? Roll call.
Yes.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Tony?
Oh, is that me? Yes.
Sorry. MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Motion carries for that letter of concern recommendation, and I'm proposing the same language that we had in the previous letter of concern for the previous case, if everybody's okay with that, or I can reread it. And is there a second to that aforementioned language?
Martin, second.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
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 Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Bahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that letter of concern content. As previously discussed, we are now on agenda item 4B16. And Dr. Fukami, I believe you are recused from this.
Correct. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Just verifying. Case number 2024-00458. Comments, thoughts, recommendations, proposals by the committee. I was identifying a violation of 32.12.01.014.
Yeah, Harris seconds.
But I guess I also need to include 24 because I did make a recommendation for record keeping. So I'll also include 24. I apologize.
Yeah, for the x-rays.
Yeah.
Yeah. The poor implantology, poor management of complications, definitely. I second.
Okay. Other discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of those two violations, 32.12.01.014 and 24. For the committee, I'm looking at page 5126, and I would propose disciplinary action recommendation to include 20 CEs of record keeping, diagnosis, treatment planning, placement of implants, and management of complications.
Second.
Yep. Second by Motihari. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Motion carries for that disciplinary action recommendation. We are now on agenda item 4B19, case number 2024-00488. Comments, proposals, thoughts, recommendations by the committee?
I just wanted to throw out, am I the only one that saw a huge radiolucency above like 13, 14, 15 that was just being kind of casually managed? It struck me as odd and not appropriate.
I saw that too. That was the same, I think, case from the same. But yeah, I mean, there is a big radiolucency, I think, is coming from 15. And that's whenever he took the silver filling, he said, or the dentist said, there is like a bad odor coming.
Right.
But then after he attempted treatment of 14, it was a viral pulp.
Right.
And he didn't do the appropriate test to see if it's viral before accessing that tooth. So that's a, you know, incorrect diagnosing and incorrect treatment planning for that case that ended up for number 14 having treatment that really didn't need anything.
Right. It could have been a cyst. I mean, that may be a cyst in that area as well. I don't think they ever explored it or eliminated that possibility.
That's true.
Talking about pathology report, yes.
Or just an age with CBCT, at least to have a CBCT image to see if we can find out the extent of that without jumping into treatment.
So just out of curiosity, Skip, do you think we should make a recommendation that that area look be reevaluated?
I don't know. You know, the endodontist saw this patient afterwards and did some sort of retreat and felt satisfied, but I'm not satisfied with how this patient was treated.
The endodontist report, I believe it talks about a 6-month recall, because that's what I would do in a situation like this, to recall and make sure the bone is healing. And I'm hoping that the endodontist took a CBCT and hopefully has more information. But I agree with you. I think from beginning it wasn't handled properly from diagnosis and everything else.
If an endodontist has seen it, I'm willing to let it ride. But if there hadn't been an endodontist to follow it up with this, I would think this was totally mismanaged.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was identifying violations of 32, 120101, 14, and 24.
Yeah, pair of seconds.
Further discussion? Roll call?
Caputa?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Infuse?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Lahari?
Yes.
So motion carries for the finding of those two violations. For the committee, I'm looking at pages 55, 02, and 03. I'm proposing a disciplinary action recommendation to include 30 CEUs through Credits Cares program in record keeping and billing procedures, root canal, diagnosis, treatment planning and treatment, extractions, and bone grafting.
And can I, oh, we'll do restitution after?
Yeah.
Okay. So Harris seconds.
Okay. Other discussion?
I guess referencing the earlier case, we'd already made other recommendations for this practitioner. And are we adding to that? I mean, some of these overlaps.
Well, we're just handling this per Seamus's direction. We're handling this as a separate issue.
Okay, because I would also add suspend the 1302 permit.
Oh, I see. Since we did that before, we can leave that as it is.
Okay.
Because that would have been addressed. Yes, thank you for that.
Okay.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to double that, Cynthia. Thank you.
Perfect.
So are you good?
I think so. I mean, I guess.
Yeah, no, it would be addressed there. You're absolutely right. So, yeah, we don't need to do it a second time.
And committee members, I apologize. I just wanted to say, at the end of your motion, all you have to do is to say recommend to combine these two because it appears that there's many issues that dovetail. Or at least one major issue that dovetails. So you can move to combine them based on the fact that there are these, you know, like issues. So whatever you decide to do, you can.
I've got an idea that'll take care of it, Cynthia.
Okay, I guess what I'm, and I know you know my concern is that let's say that these two cases somehow get split in some way, right? Then if it's not reflected in both.
Yes. I've got an idea that I think will address it.
Thank you.
But it's, having said that, was there anything else you wanted to add besides that?
I don't think so.
Okay. So right now we have on this particular complaint, an item, we have a disciplinary action recommendation of 30 CEUs through the Credits Cares program and record keeping and billing procedures, root canal therapy, diagnosis, treatment, planning, and treatment, extractions, and bone grafting. And I think, did you second that, Skip?
Yes, sir.
Okay, further discussion? Roll call. Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Hukami?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Bahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that disciplinary action recommendation. And there is a restitution identified in the amount of $1,406.30 to insurance and $2,284.20 to the patient. Those numbers seem accurate to everybody?
I just wanted to confirm that that included the bone graft that was unnecessary.
I believe it does, but I'll look to others to help me be clean on that.
I think it does, too.
Okay. So is there a second to that restitution recommendation?
I second.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukani?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Hurry.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that recommendation on restitution. We would like to recommend to the board to combine the recommendation regarding the 1302 permit suspension with case number 2024-00325 for similar findings. That sound okay, Seamus?
Yeah, in the event that the whole matter is, that each matter is not wholly combined.
Yeah. And does that help, Cynthia?
Yes.
Okay. You want to second that?
Second.
Second by Fukami. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Diaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Bahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that recommendation to combine with the aforementioned case. I'm just going to skip real quick because of Skip. I'm going to go to agenda item 4B23, case number 2025-00006. Thoughts, comments, or otherwise on this? I was looking at violations of 32-12-0101, 14-23, and 24. But I also was leaning, I think, to non-disciplinary, so I could go either way. because we don't have to find, we could still find a violation of 23 and not make it a disciplinary because that's a non-compliance with subpoena.
Yeah, I was just rereading. I mean, I just have poor records and billing irregularities, but not anything terrible. So I can do non-disciplinary.
Okay. Is that anybody else feel similarly?
I'm good with that.
Okay. So let's do a non-disciplinary recommendation to include 4 CEs in record keeping, 3 CEs in insurance billing, and 8 CEs in diagnosis, treatment planning, and restorative dentistry.
Looking for second?
Yeah.
Second.
Second by Motihari. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Bukhani?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that non-disciplinary recommendation. Then there is a violation of 32-1201-23 for non-compliance with subpoena, recommending a fine of $500. Is there a second for that?
Kappa, second.
Okay, further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Bukhani?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the noncompliance to subpoena recommendation and fine. The only other thing I want to address with the committee on this was there was an issue that the investigator found with insurance billing and patient out-of-pocket charges, as well as frequency of radiographs, intraoral versus PAN, and what the licensee was doing. I was considering recommending an audit of 20 random charts to look at those issues. Did anybody see that similarly or feel similarly or otherwise?
I saw the issue with the x-rays, and I do think it was related to insurance issues, and I didn't know how to have that evaluated. I agree with you.
To do an audit, would you think that's reasonable?
Is that or put it in the CE that needs to be
well, we addressed it in the CE for sure. Let me just see what else.
Dr. Caputo?
Yes, Seamus.
You know, I just like I said, I like where Dr. Fukami is going here. You know, I know that sometimes it is important to see the extent of something. But if you do believe that something is happening, the severity of whatever that violation is should dictate your discipline. And so if, you know, you include it in there, we can capture it that way. And again, that is what will be that signifier for that individual. If there's, you know, information received in the future, then again, it just gets ratcheted up. But I just wanted to provide that again, not dictating how
you work. I guess I was just thinking we could, the recommendation of CE I feel is appropriate, but also just an audit as a secondary opportunity just to see what sort of is happening in this practice and if there's a larger situation occurring. But your thought is include it in the non-disciplinary recommendation instead. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Well, and if you think that, you know, if you have information that states that this is happening, you know, maybe that rises
beyond the report.
Maybe it rises above the level of non-discipline. Maybe that's how you take care of it in the form of allowing the board to monitor the individual through probation and CE requirements. Again, I'm just giving you options. There's a way to do it through non-disciplinary CEs. Maybe you can provide, you know, require them to undertake more CEs in order to ensure that that issue is rehabilitated.
I appreciate that. So, Cynthia, let me ask you. Wait a second. Is someone?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hit it twice.
Oh, that's fine. So the recommendation to do record keeping and insurance billing, diagnosis and treatment planning, do you think that would cover the x-rays, or should we have a separate CE in the area of radiographs?
I'm a fan of separate, since it's non-disciplinary, kind of a separate CE in radiographs.
All right, so we can add on to this then, let's say four CEs in radiology technique and frequency or
guidelines
works. Okay, so we're going to propose an addition to the CE on this one, four CEs in the area of radiology techniques and guidelines.
Second.
Second by Fukami. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Cynthia?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that additional CE recommendation. Sorry about being a little wonky on how I handled that. All right, we are now in our last case. It is 4B22, case number 2025-00005. I think I got all the zeros in there. I was going to propose a letter of concern. So what does the committee think?
I had the same indication for letter of concern regarding clinical notes should reflect all that transpired during the appointment.
Okay. And good communication with patients.
Good addition.
Yeah. Anybody feel differently? So, Deb, you want to second the motion for a letter of concern?
I second.
Okay. Roll call for letter of concern.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ali?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Martinez?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for a letter of concern. So as we were discussing, I would propose content to include a discussion of the importance of good communication with patients and thorough and complete record keeping. Sound okay?
I think that could be a little vague in terms of, you know, like all the record keeping wasn't deficient, so it was mainly just about, like, everything that happened in the appointment should be recorded. Even though it's not a clinical data point that's being collected, it's still an important part of the notes.
So vague in terms of how it was proposed, what would you say differently?
Yeah, I had indicated, the language I was looking for was clinical notes should reflect all that transpired during the appointment.
So thorough and complete record keeping is not what doesn't get that point across, is what I hear you saying.
It's left up to interpretation of where was the exact deficiency in the record keeping, and that was it, everything else.
So discuss the importance of good communication with patients and, to your part, go ahead.
Comprehensive clinical notes that reflect all that transpired during the appointment.
How about clinical notes that identify what occurred during the appointment?
Sounds good.
Okay. Are you good with that, April? All right. You want to second that, Deb?
I always forget the second. Yes, I second.
Okay. Other discussion? Roll call on the content of that letter of concern.
Caputo? Harris?
Yes.
Yes, and I'm out. So, bye, guys.
Thanks, Skip.
Goodbye.
Sorry?
Yes.
Connie?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Bonahari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for the content of that letter of concern recommendation. And I think that takes care of all agenda items in that on our list to take care of. Did I miss anything just because I jumped a little bit? I just want to make sure we're good. Sounds like we're good. Awesome. So we are now on agenda item five, yes, which is recommendation for our vacant position. So I know that email was sent out. I believe it was Yasmin that sent it out, but it was with CVs and resumes regarding the open position. And I hope you all had a chance to look at that. Any thoughts, comments about anybody that we might want to consider to be on that list? Does anybody know any of those folks and maybe has spoken to them about this and maybe even referred them?
And Dr. Caputo, real quick, this is Seamus. Based on, you know, how it went last time at the board, it definitely would be helpful if you could identify more than one individual, if there is more than one individual that you would like to recommend, or even rank them. You know, I know that sounds real archaic, but at the same time, just to help the board, you know, understand where you're coming from.
Sure, I appreciate that. I think the ranking part is hard because I don't know that all of us know anybody at that level to be able to do that. But, yeah, we could certainly attempt that.
Well, and please know the board's very the first question they asked was what did the committee need? What was their specific request? So they're very attuned to what you do need. So, again, recommendations based on that will help.
Okay. Well, the one for sure we're looking at, I believe I can speak on behalf of the committee, is we want a general dentist, right? Any disagreement there?
You are correct.
Okay. So did any of you make a referral of any of these folks that you could speak to them? Okay, it doesn't sound like it. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yes, I looked at the resumes. I mean, there is just a vast experiences there. I mean, some of them are educators at the university. Some are retirees, so they have experience. Some of them are new to dentistry. So what is this committee looking for from a general dentist? Like the experience, the knowledge or the feel for the general dentist, the new general dentist that come into and get a license. What are you trying to get, let's say?
I would say, and certainly open for anybody else to jump in as well. I mean, I'm not, in this particular response, I'm not speaking for anyone other than what I'm thinking. But I think we want somebody that has more experience versus less. Where might I switch that line? I mean, I know for me personally, 10 years was a good demarcation that I had enough clinical experience that I felt pretty good and knowledgeable about my practice and what I was doing. So I kind of like the idea of minimally having at least 10 years of experience. I think beyond that, I don't think it's negative at all in terms of where they come from. I think educators can be really helpful, and provide a perspective that we might not have from a private practice. And conversely, I think private practice can be really helpful. So I don't necessarily distinguish where the person has practiced or is practicing. Certainly if they had both, that would be really great, which I have no issue with either, other than just being supportive of that. But I would at least start with enough experience to be able to say, yeah, you understand dentistry at a level that would be appropriate for this committee. I think the other issue that we get into, Madi, is having potential members who understand and accept the time commitment. You know, this gets a little bit easier as you've been doing it for a longer period of time. And maybe easier, I mean, by more efficient. But you put in a lot of time to this committee, and there is a level of dedication that we make that sometimes folks don't necessarily realize. And so the last thing we want to see happen is we get someone on the committee, they're a great fit and everything, but they really didn't appreciate the time commitment, and therefore they end up departing. And that's just tough if you can prevent it. Obviously, you're not always going to prevent it. So those are some general comments, and I'll certainly open it up to others to provide any feedback to what Madi is asking.
To that end, this is Akami, I think, am I correct in assuming, I think that the missive or the notice that was sent out clearly explained that there is a not insignificant time commitment involved in this, and that by, is that true? I think that was the case, right? I think we all emphasized that last time. It was no small point. Okay, so maybe we can make the assumption that at least they've all been uniformly informed of that as they apply.
As I remember last time, Cynthia, once we identified people, I think it was Dr. Motihari that contacted those folks directly and had that discussion. Is that right, Mindy?
Yes, and Dr. Ali thought I was a scam call. And thankfully, actually, board member said, we never call you guys, so she's definitely a scam. So I got the support.
Oh, you got the double whammy.
Yes, but I think we changed the criteria on the advertisement as well.
To make that
estimate. Yeah.
So to your point, Cynthia, I do think it was addressed. I believe it was.
Okay. Addressed. That helps. I'm in agreement with you on the years of, minimum years of experience is helpful, can only be helpful. That maybe that was my only thought. My other mix of this would be, I don't know if geographically it's helpful to have a bigger variety as well, just because I know what pops up on occasion is that there might be multiple conflicts of interest when everyone, you know, practices within a similar given area, right? I don't know if that is an issue that comes up once in a while, but I didn't see a huge distribution that way. And yeah. I'm not a great contributor otherwise, unfortunately, in terms of the folks that are on here. I think maybe everyone else here might have better comments on that.
Okay. Did anybody review anybody's credentials or submission that really struck them and they kind of thought this is a good person to consider? Any names come up?
Well, Anthony, I know Dr. Winterhaller is a big name in implants.
Okay.
Yeah, I know some families in Scottsdale that have just gone to him. And then I know Nishan, I've worked with him before. Those are the two on the list that I know.
Yeah, my only consideration for Nishan is that he's not a general dentist, right?
Yeah.
And I think I'd hate to see, especially with a committee this size, to have a large representation from one area of specialty.
Yeah.
And then I think your point, and I think that was clear in Dr. Winterhaller's presentation, is his strength is implants. And I think that's pretty much his practice. And so my only thought there is I would like us to have somebody that has a larger breadth of experience and connection to dentistry. Because I think what happens is when you're practicing in one area at the level that Dr. Winterhalter may likely be practicing, you kind of only look at things through that prism. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's my only concern. Like the bread and butter dentistry issues kind of get fallen by the wayside with that sort of highly trained dentist in that one area.
I have some, you know, I read all the CVs and really three caught my attention. So George Spine, he's basically a faculty at Midwestern University. I mean, he's a general dentist, so that is one that caught my eye, his resume. Asil Murad, also a faculty at Midwestern. She has 20 years. Also, Edwin McDonald. He's, in a way, almost retired, but not really. He works as a temporary dentist at Princess Dental Staffing. So I think he has the time and the knowledge. So these three caught my attention according to the requirements, you know, somebody sure. that, so because, you know, with them being faculties at the university, they have a little bit, maybe, more time to invest into the reading and.
Well, our experience, honestly, has been that sometimes that's not the case. In fact, sometimes our faculty are quite committed in different areas, and we actually ended up with a vacancy because of two vacancies. Not necessarily directly related to their faculty. One, for sure, their faculty obligations. The second one was more personal, but one for sure had such tremendous faculty obligations that they had to, they submitted their resignation. It was just too hard to balance all of that. So sometimes being on faculty actually can be quite challenging, just depending. So I hear what you're saying, but I do feel like faculty can be challenged too in terms of their time commitment.
To that point, I feel silly being the one talking about this, but I think that if there's any, I don't want to say deficiency, but sometimes kind of gaps on what we're doing, it's for the general dentist who's in private practice who can comment on what, or maybe more accurately reflect what is standard of care for someone in private practice, like the issues that arise in those scenarios, kind of like the things we're talking about with the hiring practices, right? For those who are hiring staff, like that came up this time, or making referrals when appropriate, those kinds of things. I would think that maybe a general dentist in private practice would be able to sort of head off those questions earlier on.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I know for me, two names that kind of jumped out when I reviewed all the information after looking over everything were Matthew Kennedy and Jeff Gerlich. The one thing I was impacted by with Jeff is he also has a lot of past board experience, and he served in various capacities on the board at certain times. So I found that to be potentially helpful and supportive in terms of what we're doing on this committee. I don't know if anybody felt the same about any of those names.
Dr. Caputo, I actually have interviewed Dr. Gerlich for a position. He's pretty diverse, and he has taught some advanced general dentistry, so he's pretty adverse in that area. I second your opinion. He was one of my choices as well.
Okay. Anybody else?
Dr. Motihari, do you have any other recommendations from this list?
Yeah, actually, there's another one that I put in my list, which is Dr. Carlos. I think he's a graduate of UCLA, 88. He's been in private practice. I agree with that one, and I also agreed with Dr. McDonald as well. Seems like he's been practicing general dentistry for a long time. Those names came out one of the faculty of one that was mentioned, they have been in simulation. So as you said, Dr. Fakami, it's really important for them to have a clinical experience as well. Even if you are in education, it would be beneficial to have some clinical experience. So that's why I picked my choices for these. I would say last time we came very close with Dr. Garlick, but we were looking for for prosthodontist. So I think having a little bit advanced education for Dr. Garlick, it's going to put him a little bit higher as a general dentist. It's just going to be a little bit more versed. These were my choices.
So we've got at least two people that have had two. The only thing I'm curious about is, on Dr. McDonald, is there more than one or just there's just one?
It's one, Dr. McDonald. Okay. It's candidate number three.
Right. And it says number of years. He's been practicing for 10 years or he's just been licensed here for 10 years?
I think he's been licensed here for 10 years.
That's correct. I was checking that too.
Because I just heard both of you guys say he's practiced for a long time and I'm like, okay. 10 years doesn't seem that long, but. I'm hearing you. So I would say at least at the top of our list are Garlick and McDonald for at least being mentioned more than once. Does that seem fair?
So Dr. McDonald, I saw his resume just now. He practiced 1976.
Okay, so he's been practicing for a while.
Yeah.
And he's also on faculty as well at Midwestern. Is that what I heard you say?
Not Dr. McDonald, no.
Not McDonald, okay. He's just been in practice, private practice, as far as we know.
Correct.
Okay. So we have one position to fill. Are we good with submitting two names, or do we feel like we need to submit more?
I think three would be best, I think, if we had a third name.
Okay. Of the names that had been mentioned by various members up to this point, outside of McDonald and Garlick, anybody else identify with anybody that has been mentioned? I think we've heard Winterhaller. We've heard Spine.
Dr. Carlos, Roger Carlos. How does everybody feel about him?
And Carlos. And I think that was it. Oh, and Chauhan.
Didn't we omit Chauhan because he's not really.
That was my. I mean, I'm just telling you my position, but I don't. I don't want to omit anybody unless there's sort of agreement by the board. It would put three dentist anesthesiologists on our committee, and I think that's probably more than we need.
That is more than we need, I'm sure. Kennedy, candidate number 16.
Oh, right. I mentioned Kennedy, correct.
Oh, did you? I missed it.
And you were feeling good. You would have made a nomination or proposal for Kennedy. Is that what you're saying, Deb?
Yeah, I would support him.
Okay. Anybody else? All right.
I go with that, too.
Okay, so what I would propose, we have three names then that have at least had two people provide some support or indication for offering a position on the committee. It seems to me that Garlick and McDonald probably are one and one. Is that fair? I don't know that there's – or would you put Garlick one and McDonald two and then Kennedy three?
I second that.
You're good. Is anybody not good with that? All right. So we're going to propose to the board three names. Dr. Jeff Gerlich, our number one selection. Dr. Edwin McDonald III, our second selection. And Dr. Matthew Kennedy, our third selection. Do we need to vote or anything on that, Ryan, or we're good?
I would vote, yeah.
Oh, Seamus says vote. All right. So there was a second by Motihari. Roll call.
Katina?
Yes.
Ali? Ali?
Madi, are you still with us?
Asrari?
Yes.
Yes, for Asrari.
Connie?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, so the motion carries for those three recommendations in that rank order. So we're good. That takes us to agenda item 6. And Ali, when we get here, Dr. Ali, sorry, we get here, what that means, have you been able to look at the whole, has anybody kind of gone over this packet with you?
The packet itself,
I just want you to go down to the very bottom of the packet, even though I don't see it on here. Is the listing of the complaint log, is the complaint log on here? Is it? Oh, there it is. Nope, that's just on the agenda. Didn't we used to have a table with the complaint listed?
I think I saw that. Let me just...
I don't see it on this particular packet, so only reason I say that. But generally, at the end of this package, when we receive it, you get the statutes and rules. So ARS is the statutes. AAC is the rules.
Dr. Caputo?
Yes.
The complaint log is on page 6398 of the original packet. You may be looking at the supplemental.
6398. I'll try it. Let's see. Oh, there it is. So, yeah, if you go to 6398, the idea of that complaint log, Madi, is just to give you an opportunity to review any of those cases and the licensee involved in the case so that if you feel as though there is a for sure identified conflict of interest, you can contact Yasmin and let her know, and then they can process a form for you to complete. But just an opportunity to kind of be ahead of the game, okay?
So these are complaints for next time, correct?
Just coming up. They have disposition on them as well. So you can see if you read across, it indicates the licensee, the complainant, the date the complaint was received, how old the file is. And Ryan, I believe those are in days, right?
Yes.
That's correct.
And then see how it says committee member conflict, so that can get identified. When it went to committee, that's us, and then it went to the board, and then the case update in the final column there on the right. So it looks like there's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 or so pages of the complaint log. So it's just an opportunity for you to look at it and see if you see anything on there that would cause you to otherwise be conflicted on that complaint.
Okay, I understand.
And then, like I said, there's a listing for the statutes and rules also typically attached to the packet. So that's what that is about. Summary of current events. Ryan, anything to comment about?
I can answer any questions about legislation or whatever, but things are, the OPA bill passed. It was signed yesterday. There's a couple other things. The compact passed again in the House, but it's awaiting a floor vote And then if it passes the House again, it'll go back to the Senate. And, but it, because it's, they used it as a striker vehicle, it does not have to go through committee again in the Senate. It just goes to the caucuses, which is basically a yes, no, move it along. And then it goes back to, and then it goes to the Senate for a floor vote. So it's just waiting two floor votes, essentially. I don't know that there's much more. Do you have anything?
And then what about the board composition?
Oh, so yeah, that's Senate Bill 1235. That bill was amended. There was a floor amendment in the, I don't even know what, I'm lost where it was at, but I think it was in this House. And there was a floor amendment to, it was not a strike everything. She wanted to keep some of it intact, which she left the dental board the way she originally planned. But she did it on purpose and contacted our office to let us know that she'll change that. So the composition hasn't, she went back to the original composition. It's still 11 members. It's still not the, my favorite bill. There's things in there that I would definitely get rid of, but I mean, certainly I think we can live with it.
It's not the original language where it was really going to change the board composition.
Yes.
Sorry, I apologize to jump in. Summary: the summary of current events is strictly no discussion. It's only an update from Ryan. I apologize.
Oh, gotcha.
Sorry.
Or anybody, right?
Yeah, it's just for Ryan to update the board on any current events. Yeah. Or if anybody has a current event. Yeah, they can.
No, I understand. But yeah.
Is this month?
All right. Anything else, Ryan?
Nothing for me. I was asking if she had anything to give, and there's nothing.
The only thing I would just put out there, just because it just happened, there was a death with a pediatric patient, 9 years old, in California. And so there are a lot of news stories out there. For whatever reason, this particular event has garnered a lot more exposure and discussion than past events, or maybe at least similar to some. But it's always a big deal when a child is involved, but people may hear or know about that. There's not a lot of information that's out there right now, one way or the other, but it is something that recently happened. Obviously very unfortunate that it happened in a dental office. So not much more other detail I can provide, but just wanted to make folks aware of that if you haven't heard about it already. Anything else? All right. So our next meeting is scheduled for May 13th. And Madi, did you get all the dates for the rest of the year? Did that get provided to you?
Yes, I have them. Yes.
Okay, good. All right, good. Well, you know, one of the things, and I'm sure you may have been told this, but if not, obviously the expectation is that you're at as many meetings as you can, but we know there's conflicts that occur. We usually do pretty good because of the number of members we have to maintain a quorum. So to that end, we really appreciate you being a part of this and continuing your involvement, and look forward to just continuing to improve on what we do and how we perform in this committee. So with that, I don't have anything else. Just mark your calendars for May 13th if you haven't already. And it is now 4:28, and I'll call this meeting adjourned. Thank you all very much for everything.